everyone. 7-0 versus 7-0. The thing we've been hyping up almost.
Let's do it!
Almost to a point of jinxing it over and over again for the last month. It's finally happened. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of The Beat, brought to you by DirecTV Stream. Get your TV together with the best live and on demand. Learn more at DirecTV.com. I'm, of course, Nick Baumgartner, along with Brendan Quinn. And here it is, my man. First time.
How about it?
First time as top 10 foes since 1964, which, I mean, as someone who knows the history of Michigan, Michigan State better than I would say most, I think I can say now, over the years, that still surprises me. That is the first, it just does, that there hasn't been one other game in there since 1964. Am I wrong in that? Do you feel the same?
No, I had just, as we were building toward this, I'm like, you know, I just assumed that.
Yeah. There would have been one.
It was going to be a big deal because it's a big deal.
Yeah.
But
right.
I thought the historical relevance, I didn't realize it was going to be quite this level. But man,
yeah.
Here it is.
Here it is. Not something we certainly had thought would be possible, but in the truest, sort of sense of the Spider-Man gif here, the two Spider-Mans pointing at each other. I mean, this has been Michigan, Michigan State, two examples of two teams that remade themselves on the field and off the field this offseason. Two head coaches that were bold, I would say, in their, and aggressive maybe, whatever. I don't know if bold's the right word, aggressive in their decisions.
Right.
Harbaugh, because he probably really had no choice, and Mel Tucker, because he doesn't want to have any choice, I think.
Right.
And two guys that just have grinded, and their staffs have backed them up all the way, and I think it's just been really two of the best coaching jobs we've seen this year. Anywhere.
Still don't know if either's that good.
We don't know if either is that good to a point of either is going to be good enough to be a contender.
I still don't know.
But I do think both teams are going to finish the year as solid football teams. You know what I mean? And I don't know if we would have said that as a guarantee when the year started. So I just think to get them both to this point with all the, where it was for both sides and all the trip ups and things you could have had, and knowing that both teams have had to sort of dig deep, you know, for games, you know, this year and win,
sure.
win a couple that maybe they shouldn't have gotten in other years, says a lot, I think, about two guys.
No, it's nice.
Pretty cool.
It's nice of both of these bozo programs to catch up with their basketball counterparts. I've been covering amazing basketball games for years. I don't know what the big deal is. You idiots have been sitting around here, you know, with these two banging heads against each other.
Yeah, it finally feels like we actually have two coaches who are just about football, which is pretty cool for me. I don't know if you saw this. I told Colton we would get into this on later in the week when we have the Colton and Austin on. But did you see what Harbaugh said about Mel Tucker yesterday? The relationship there?
That was the least surprising.
So,
anyone that was surprised by that.
So
is not
Mel Tucker, Harbaugh says, to recap for those who haven't seen it, he's a big Mel Tucker fan. I think he said that before. He likes Mel Tucker and has known him for a while. But Mel Tucker, when he was at Georgia with Kirby Smart, was next door neighbors to one Tom Crean, of course.
Amazing.
Who is, of course, Jim Harbaugh's brother-in-law. And, of course, you know, so Harbaugh and Mel Tucker have known each other, you know, through that relationship. And Harbaugh said yesterday he's thinks Mel's doing a tremendous job at Michigan State. Big, big fan of his, all this sort of thing. I think we've said this before. Both those guys do have a firm, I think, respect for the other as football coaches. And they put football first. And for me, I like it. I don't think there's a lot of other writers necessarily who love it. I love it.
Yeah.
But yes, the Tom Crean thing. Did you see this? And you?
No, amazing. So I when I said the surprised about it, I meant the fact that he respects the hell out of him and that he's somehow connected to him. Because any football lifer, Jim Harbaugh can probably do 2 or 3 degrees of separation with.
Yeah. That's fair.
You know what I mean?
That's fair.
That's what I meant. That there was some kind of personal tie-in there.
But the fact
that
Tom Crean
thing. Imagining Mel Tucker hanging out with Tom Crean is its own reality show. Like,
buddy,
where is...
Listen, that was Tom Crean hanging out with Mel Tucker, okay? To be clear. Not Mel Tucker hanging out with Tom Crean. Let's make sure we get that role Is that what just, it needs to be said?
I'm just picturing Tom walking and
hanging out of the fence
100 miles an hour with his Diet Coke in the backyard, just ranting and raving and talking about this, and Mel just chilling there with a cigar. And like, what
are you what talking about?
The hell is wrong with this man? Like, without a doubt, that was the relationship.
Probably, yeah. But Harbaugh loves Mel, so I don't know if the feeling's mutual, but I do think that the two of them do share respect for each other as coaches. They've certainly
Crean,
worked.
Do you think Crean is rooting for Harbaugh?
I think he's rooting for Harbaugh, yeah. Not his old neighbor. I think he would be rooting for for Michigan on that one, I would assume. But
I love when all those wires get crossed. The old the old Harbaugh in the Crean locker room at Chrysler.
Honestly, it was also like the 17th time, and no, you know, and I think it's Tom Crean. He's doing a good job there, right, at Georgia, or is he not?
No.
Are they struggling?
No, he'll be fired this year.
It's the 17th time that I have forgotten that he's the head coach at Georgia. When Aaron McMahon tweeted that, and then Kyle Austin tweeted that Tom Crean is the Kevin Bacon of all college sports in the state of Michigan, which is 100% true. Tom Crean knows everyone, or is coached with and against and for everyone here, I think, at one point or another. So. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good stuff there, but we'll get into Michigan here first, maybe, you think, and then we'll maybe break
let's
this down.
Just,
what
let's
think?
Just what do you want to break do? Her down the Michigan stuff along the way. I think for me, and I am on I'm wired on caffeine and no sleep. I had a 6 a.m. flight out of Memphis this morning, so I'm in a good weird place. My
saw
first
the
question
this morning
we got to get
up
right into is
how was the Bass Pro Pyramid? Did you see that this morning?
Oh my god. For anyone who doesn't know, the old pyramid in Memphis was converted to a Bass Pro Shop. And when I saw, I almost drove off the side of the goddamn road. I couldn't believe it. I got off the exit immediately, drove all the way down that big winding ass highway, right down to the riverfront.
Got right up
to
it.
To get down there, got right up to it. It was just, it's just a marvel. It is a marvel. I'm taking pictures. I'm taking selfies in front of it. This is just the most incredible thing I've ever seen. So, yes, the pyramid is now a Bass Pro Shop. Unreal. Unreal. You can go camp in it. You can go camp.
Pretty cool.
You can pitch a tent in the pyramid.
I don't know why you want to do that. But
how about it?
Did you do it?
No, I didn't. I stayed at one of the worst courtyards by an airport.
Oh, well, there you go.
Anyway.
There you go.
I think the first part of the conversation is, look, the game means the world to both programs, right? Yep.
Yes.
Does it mean, is it more important to either right now, today? Because I've got thoughts on that.
I think that for the first time in a minute, I would say that this is as close to probably even, maybe as we've seen. I don't know. But I think probably Michigan, I think they're going to hate it more if they lose, but like, I don't think Mel Tucker is going to be living, loving it, right? This is an opportunity for him. Okay, different, right? If I'm talking different. Mel Tucker, Michigan State, okay, then it's Michigan, yeah. Michigan,
exactly.
Michigan needs to win the game.
I mean,
Mel Tucker needs to win the game. Yeah.
No doubt. I mean, Mel will run through walls, I'm sure, to win this game. But he has a win over Michigan. Them being 7-0, they're so far ahead of schedule, it's crazy, right? And this team, to me, looks like it's, you know, it's ripping its way toward, you know, a great bowl game. It's exceeding all expectations. Mm-hmm. If Harbaugh goes and loses this game,
it's not going to be great.
I feel like the conversation starts all over again.
It probably goes back.
Them being favored is such a kick.
it's not
like
great.
That is not great for Michigan.
But it's also like, I mean, it depends on who's having the conversation, and depends on what happens in the game. Because this is where this is why we have this show here, and this is why we get into the old nuance and the old weeds. Because as some of the folks found out on Twitter on Saturday, yelling at me for 4.5 hours there.
Oh, we're gonna talk quarterbacks. Don't
this
worry.
Game. Sometimes can be a little more, right? There's a lot going on sometimes. So it's just like, it's complicated. I don't know how to, like, where am I going with this? What am I setting up? Does Harbaugh need to win this game to save his job?
I don't know.
I mean, I don't think that that's a conversation that anyone's having, I guess is what I would say. Who's having the conversation? If this is a conversation that talk radio is going to start up with, then yeah, if Jim Harbaugh loses that game, that's fair. If Harbaugh loses, talk radio and Paul Feinbaum and whomever is going to start back up with, he should be fired right now. This is stupid, fire him right now. And any knee-jerk 30,000 foot, you know the type, who doesn't know anything about the situation, doesn't take the time to understand the topic at hand, doesn't take the time to understand the people who are there, doesn't take time to understand anything that's going on, just reins in on top and says, I decree what's going on here, and bye. Those people will say he needs to be fired. You might even get some people who do know a little bit about what's going on here would look in and say, though, that this is another sign that this is just delaying the inevitable. I think that you'd maybe see more of that.
Right.
But it also, I think, has to be taken into account that Mel Tucker's team is good. Like, this is a good team. Harbaugh's team last year was bad. They gutted it. They ripped it over. They turned it over. They changed the staff. They changed everything. I think that all circumstances still have to be sort of weighed here in the fact that it was a problem that he created. He also got them to 7-0. And if you lose this game by a touchdown in East Lansing to the number 8 team in the country, and if you want to come on the radio Monday and say Harbaugh needs to be fired, then that's your cross to bear. But, like, I don't disagree with you. I can definitely see that comes.
I would put it, when I was thinking about, like, who would it be worse for to lose, is kind of when I was thinking this morning, like,
I guess it depends
if
on the
State
loss.
Loses, you know, I think it's a kick in the ass. They're pissed. They go out, they play angry after that, right? They're going to try to make up for it. They're going to give, you know, Ohio State everything.
We don't know that. Well, we don't know that, though, because
I think this group and the way that they've been operating, I think that's how they would respond.
We've never seen them lose, man.
Michigan.
We've never seen them lose. They're a brand new team.
I feel like the way that Michigan would be immediately cast into this, like,
that's true.
That, you know what I mean? Like, that's just when all the outside.
And we have seen them react to that.
This thing has just been going so smoothly here for 7 weeks, even with the quarterback thing swirling above it, right? Where you're like, what is that bird up there? Holy shit. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just kind of up there. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Where it's like, you know, like a loss in this game could potentially, or like, I'm like, what? I feel like the shrapnel from this for Michigan would be a lot, and for Michigan State, I think it would, you know, they'd be pissed, and it would people would be angry. I'm sure.
Oh, the fans would be far more pissed.
100%. 100%.
Yeah, they'd be more pissed. I would be interested to see what the reaction would be overall, though. Yeah, because I think that it's still like all over the place with Harbaugh. People revealed their true feelings about the old ball coach, I think, on Saturday, and there absolutely still is a lot of mistrust, or not mistrust. Mm-hmm. They just don't trust him, right? Because there's evidence to suggest that, why the fuck should I? And I think that he couldn't even disagree with that in objective moments on some of the things they've done over the years that just have not worked out for inexplicable, what are you doing, right?
Right.
So, I wrote that, tweeted that, I get all that. Like, I 100% get all that. And people's initial kind of gut here is to be like, the hell am I watching? What's going on? Why is that kid who comes in off the, you know, and all these things, right? This, you know. So I get it, and I get people's sort of immediate sort of reaction to just wait for the rug pull. They're just waiting to get Charlie Brown here, right? Waiting for the football to get pulled out and him to just be like, well, you know, what do you want? We played hard or whatever, and then them to get mad, and then we start this whole thing over again, right? Like, that's, I did get a lot of that. I got a sense from that, from talking, you know, interactions with people, fans, the people last week, that they're on edge.
So let's get into it.
They're nervous, and I understand it.
Let's get into the McNamara McCarthy, right?
All
right. You're out there, I feel like, trying to...
I was on the front lines trying to do all I could, and I quit after a while. I gave up.
Yeah, man. You were running out of characters, and I was watching it in real time, just laughing.
Man, it was like the old days. I was like, fuck, I can't keep up anymore. I was like, this is
sitting in a bar in Memphis, just, you know, and I had already had a few pops, so I'm not tweeting, right? These are personal rules that have come into effect that...
You don't tweet drunk anymore?
No drinking and tweeting. So I'm sitting there, and I'm with a guy in Memphis watching the game, and I check Twitter, and I just see where you are I just see it spiraling. I'm just laughing, just having a having a great time.
About halftime there.
Oh, outstanding. So, yep. you said that we are men of nuance.
Yes, we'd like to think so. Anyway,
give the people your kind of rational,
yep,
perspective here, sir, professor.
The double J McCarthy situation. I think that I think it's very similar to what it was, but I think McCarthy continues to up the ante. I think that, mm-hmm. and I wrote this morning, and I stand by it. I think that Harbaugh and Gattis still need to be careful with him, but they can't be afraid. They can't flinch, right? They can't be scared to give him more. I don't think. And I think that we do need to see more from him, but I understand where they're at if they're concerned that he's not ready to start a game yet. I do, because even in the limited reps that we've seen from him, you know, and every time he goes out there and throws, there's one or two that he makes that you're just like, what the fuck? Jesus. You're just like, that's an NFL throw and a good NFL throw, right?
That play that was called back.
Right, and that is stupid. An NFL, that's you know, ridiculous athleticism to be able to get out of. But let's talk about that play, okay? So, like,
yep.
That's a 4th-and-3 from the, from the 11. Mm-hmm. Michigan's running mesh. All it is, you're going to run a tight end from the strong side of the formation. He's going to come across, and they've got the three receivers over to the left, and I think Sainer still is the furthest inside. So Schoonmaker and Sainer still are going to mesh. They're just going to do the old crossing routes, right?
Sure.
Crisscross. Sainer still, I believe, is his... He's going to come from left to right. I think he's his first read. He gets walled. Schoonmaker is coming back across. He's wide open, and it's a first down, and probably more if the ball's thrown on time. Exactly what you want, exactly what the play is designed to do. There is no rush. Northwestern has dropped. They've dropped 8. They're only rushing 3. Michigan's offensive line has it completely under control, and McCarthy's standing in the pocket staring at Sainer still, and he can't get off of Sainer still. And Schoonmaker's standing there. What are we doing? And there's no pass rush still. Sainer still is still not open because, of course, he's been walled off and they know what the play is. Mm-hmm. And still no pass rush. There's rush lanes where McCarthy could run out of and probably score a touchdown. But he's a freshman, right? Mm-hmm. And he's 18 years old and he was in high school last year. So he panicked and he backed out of there and ran the hell away. And it looked pretty goddamn cool, I got to say. And then he got all the way back up, made that crazy throw across the body. And it was a penalty because Filiaga had to run around like a crazy guy and try to clip somebody to get him blocked. So it was pretty awesome. And the whole crowd was like, you're goddamn right. That's what we're talking about. But I was like, hey, folks, that was not making something out of nothing. That was missing something, escaping your own mess, and then missing in the end. Because it was, you know, so there's still like freshman things that he does that I think that this team right now can't afford. Like, they're not good enough defensively. They're not good enough elsewhere, probably as a whole team, to overcome some of the errors that I think they're afraid he might make against good teams in the Big Ten if he starts and plays a whole game.
Sure.
And if you start him and play him a whole game, as mature as McNamara is, I don't know what you're getting from him. If you just say... You're benched. JJ's in.
Right.
Bye. You're 7-0. So, like, right. Gattis had a really good quote yesterday on with John Jansen there on Harbaugh's radio show. I think somebody tweeted it. Angelique might tweet it. I can't remember who did. But it was like, and I can't remember what the exact tweet was, or quote was, but it was something to the effect of Gattis had said, that is a very delicate or... careful or whatever, something like that, conversation that we take really serious in that room. The quarterback, starting quarterback job, how Cade looks at JJ and how JJ looks at Cade. The respect and everything that has to go on there is at a different level than everywhere else on the team. That was kind of his point. That is a very, like, sacred, I think was the word he's used, like, conversation and situation that only those in that room, which include Gattis, Harbaugh, and the quarterbacks, will concern themselves with. The rest of you can go fuck off, which basically is. And I think that that's how it should be. But I do understand my point to the people out there. I understand if they have reservations about McCarthy not starting a game for all those things I just said. But I do think he probably needs to play more. And I do understand why people don't trust Jim Harbaugh when he tells them that McNamara is the answer right now. I understand where they're coming from. But I'm just telling you what I see, and what I see is I think right now they're still sort of kind of where they should be. I think you need to get more from McNamara, though, and I think you need to see more from JJ.
How much more limited do you think is the play calling capabilities or whatever, or packages, whatever the hell you people talk about when you know, one versus the other? Like, if they had McCarthy in, like, sustained the way a lot of people are calling for, right? Sure. That's just the guy. Does that, how much would that limit?
So what it would do is
calling
this,
and things like that.
It wouldn't necessarily limit play calling. What it would do is, and it might, frankly, because I don't know what all he has, you know, what he's comfortable with. But what it would do is your basic reads, I guess, within, there's two things. Your offense is usually trying to stay in the right play before a snap. Michigan's sideline usually helps out with that a lot, but that's also, there's a lot on the quarterback to make sure that everybody's where they need to be before the, because Michigan oftentimes, like everybody else, is going to go up there with multiple plays, and they're going to look at the defense, and they're going to see what they want to do. So it's up to the quarterback to make sure to relay. You've got to be on top of all that. That's not nothing. That's a lot for an 18-year-old in an offense like this and all that sort of thing. Moreover, though, I think that what McCarthy or McNamara gives that you're still not quite sure you're getting from McCarthy is his reads with the ball in a play are usually right with throws. His throw reads are usually right. They're not always made, and he needs to make more, but he usually goes to the right place. Like if they're on 2nd and 10 and they just want to cut it down to 2nd and 4 so they can run get 6 yards so they can run a 3rd and 3 or because they've got a call. Sure. Like McNamara will make sure they get the 6. I'm not so sure McCarthy's not going to say, well, there's a shot down there.
Right.
I think I want to try that too. And maybe we're going to overthrow it and now we're on 3rd and 10. We're not good in 3rd and 10.
Right.
Those are the things I think that you're still worried about when I say like freshman things. Like just it's little stuff throughout the course of the game that it's not checking the ball down here when you should have. Instead, you took a chance, and now we have to punt. And we shouldn't have had to punt because that was open, right? And we should be moving the ball. Like, that's how Michigan plays, like it or not. That's how they would play if McCarthy's in the game, too. Like it or not, he comes in. Guys, they ain't changing the offense. You're not getting anything different. Got news for you on that one. So yeah. That's going to be the same. I just think there's so many situational things that are they comfortable with him not turning the ball over? Are they comfortable with him not turning the ball over? And I guess, you know, right now I would say that the evidence tells us that they're not, because he might be starting or playing half the game if they were comfortable with him not turning the ball over. I don't know that, but, you know, I do think we need to see more of him. I think that he's made enough big-time throws in these games and done some things with his feet, made plays every time he's in there, you know? I mean, he's making mistakes, but, like, whatever. If you're using him in packages and situations and letting them take a couple rips here and there. In a game like this, when you can back a team like that off with a kid who can throw like that, I think this is a great example. And I wrote about that again today, and you know this. Over the years, people ask us this all the time, you know, back in the day, you know, you think Harbaugh's saving anything for Michigan State or Ohio State? And over the years, as I've looked back on it, I never think he saves anything for anybody. But what I do think in these games, especially Michigan State, if he has a guy who he thinks is on the verge of being like a legit dude,
right?
They cut him loose in this game and let him go do it. Like this is the one where Peppers first got the ball.
That's right.
This is the one where when Devin Bush walked out there and kicked a hole in the field, and Harbaugh was like, "You want me to ref for you, Devin, while you fight the whole stadium? I'm here. Right. Let's do it." Like this is that game. Harbaugh fucking knows it. This is that game. And if he has a guy on his team that he thinks can kind of like give them something that no one else can, I gotta tell you, I think evidence has shown us whether he's made the right decision or not is a different conversation.
Sure.
I do think this is one history tells us that he's more willing to maybe roll the dice. Maybe it's like AJ Henning and not McCarthy. I don't know. But, you know, maybe he rolls the dice with one of these young kids and lets you see something. I definitely could see that happening. It's happened before.
Is this probably the final pivot point on this conversation one way or another where it's like...
Which part? Quarterbacks?
The quarterback decision. Like, if McNamara wins this game...
Oh, yeah, well...
That shit's over.
No, well, it depends on how it goes. Like, if McNamara wins this game and JJ comes in and...
That's
like
what I'm saying. If McNamara wins the game, right? And JJ comes in and does his normal, you know, a pass here, a pass there.
Doing this?
But McNamara wins it, right?
Right.
that's it, man. Conversation over. But if they either lose the game or if McCarthy comes in and is actually the guy who does, you know, make is the difference, it's over. After like, I feel like this weekend, one way or another,
if McNamara
this conversation plays, this conversation is different next week.
If Cade McNamara plays poor enough to lose this game, then this is a different conversation. Yes, and if McCarthy comes into this game and McNamara is average and not doing anything to separate, and McCarthy is the reason why they win the game, then this is a different conversation. If this is this, if this is in the Nebraska game where Michigan, you know, I think got some reps from or the Wisconsin game, whatever, where they got some reps from him. He made some good plays. He helped the cause. But McNamara was the main reason and the main quarterback. Then I think you just keep doing what you're doing.
That's what I'm saying. I think it's three scenarios. One way or another, it's we know probably or everyone probably has a better idea moving forward. That
I guess they could both play like shit.
There's that.
Which is there's that. Possible.
And then if you lose, what are you gaining going forward with McNamara?
And that's where this turns into. And again, I said that earlier about Michigan State. We haven't seen Michigan State lose yet, which is true. And we haven't seen how any of those guys together as a team have reacted in that moment. But we also haven't seen this Michigan team lose yet in this staff's message and everything else. And we haven't seen them have to sort of like handle that exact situation, like you're saying. Like,
sure.
If you do lose, and suddenly it's close, and this quarterback isn't exactly killing it, and you got this 18-year-old kid who's just lighting up the world, and you don't lean into that, then what are you doing? And I think that that's something that previous Jim Harbaugh staffs would be criticized for, and we will see if this one is. And I think that that's something that we'll see and monitor as we go forward. And those are all things to be determined here. And those are all things, I think, to be determined in the grand picture of when you go back to the takes and the people who want firings or whatever after a game in October and all this. Which at some point, can we be done with those people? Can we? No? In college football?
I don't know if that's... We can ask.
Yeah.
We can encourage people not...
Would be great.
Not to follow the butterflies, you know? But
it's going to happen.
Sometimes people wander, man.
But yeah, but anyway, I mean, yeah, that'll happen one way or the other. I mean, you guys know that, so is what it is by now. But, I mean, their season's not going to be destroyed if they lose.
Well, speaking of firings the flashy headlines or whatever the hell it may be, any say on Mel's response yesterday to being asked about LSU?
So he just said, like, I'm just thinking about this game, right?
Yeah. The what right answer.
I don't know what else he's supposed to say, but like, I guess the only people that would, I mean, the only criticisms that you could maybe levy on him would be like, he had the bye week. He had last week and he didn't really, I don't think he said anything. I don't think they had a press conference. If he did, I apologize. I don't remember that though.
I don't think they had a press conference last week.
But also again, like, what's he supposed to fucking, he did the thing at Colorado and then left. He said, I'm staying and left.
That was going to be my thing.
He's probably like, I'm never doing that again, no matter what. Like,
there's
got
to
like,
be scar tissue there that you can't say anything that ends
you're
up
not gonna,
being used against you.
You're not going to read Mel Tucker even if you want to. So I think anybody out there who's trying to read tea leaves on what he's thinking are going to have a tough road. I think some of the players even said he hasn't talked about it with him, which, you know, I guess that's probably up to you on how you determine, you know, how that would impact your locker room. If he doesn't think it's impacting the locker room, then whatever. But if it's impacting the locker room and he's not telling them, then I would. But that's not to say that that's happening. No one suggested that it was.
Right.
But, you know, that was something that I did see a player said that yesterday that I was like, well. But, you know, you're focusing on, it's horrible timing, of course, if you're Mel Tucker, right? You don't
not
want
ideal.
This.
Yeah.
You don't want this coming out during the bye week. You don't want that coming out during this or whatever. But as we've discussed before, like, he's not going to close any doors. He's not going to shut anybody off. Do I think Mel Tucker's going to pack up the car and drive to Baton Rouge tomorrow? No. But, like, I mean, I don't think he's going to close anything off. So, and nor should he. And, you know, nor should we be demanding that he do so, or anyone at this point, really. We do that all the time in this.
That would have been great if he just came right out and just gave, like, the most straightforward answer and was just like, look, it's
what
fucking LSU.
Yeah.
They might offer me $8 million. You think I'm not going to listen to them if they call me? It would be the best.
That would be some legendary shit right there.
What's the offer? Like, yeah, right? Like, good God. I mean, like, so...
He's like, that dumbass Ed Ogeron just won a national championship there. I could be the greatest coach in program history if that idiot
I think everybody knows. I think everybody knows the score on that one, though, right? Like, everybody by now knows the deal there. You're going to have to put up with this, right? And, like, you're not going to know. I don't think we're going to be able to read much into what he says, because he doesn't say anything anyway. So, yeah, not surprising at all. Like you said, not surprising. Probably the only answer there was the, you know, we got a game here, and it's a pretty big one. And, oh, by the way, it's the reason why I'm even in this conversation anyway. And if I win it, maybe that conversation gets a little louder. So, like, I mean, all things positive, man.
It will.
It will. If Michigan State wins it, how about that? Michigan State wins this game on Saturday. And I know we've talked about on the show that I still don't think people nationally have even, I think, of course, whatever, people nationally, whatever. Half of them even know that Mel Tucker's at Michigan State yet? I guess they'll all know by the end of this if he wins. So, yes, I think that his stock, or whatever you want to call it, would take, I mean, whatever point it's at right now, whatever you think about Michigan, good or bad, doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. If they win that game in front of that crowd on TV, stock up. Like, you know what I mean? And probably some sweating going on
big time
in the Haller house. I would think so.
There's
going to
be phone calls. There's
no other
be
way to say it. Like,
who's got the money cannon?
That's it. And we've talked about it. Like, this guy,
it's on.
He wants to win the whole shot. I don't think Mel Tucker's here to win a couple Big Ten titles and come back for a spaghetti dinner about a Rose Bowl, right? Like, I don't think that's happening, okay? Like, I think he wants to be the top dog. And if you want to go and take that ride with him and prove to him that you can do that, that's what Michigan State, I think, if you want to get into a conversation where you think you're going to have to negotiate to keep Mel Tucker, you're going to have to prove to him that you can win a national title. You're going to have to prove to him that you can do it realistically, fair, and the way he wants, you know, with the money and all the things that is required. And so, that's a different conversation. I know that some people disagree with us and think that Michigan State's budget is in sparkling shape, but it's not. I mean, no one's is. Like, that was more my point than anything. Like, the crazy, crazy rich schools and the crazy rich schools are still separated by a lot of money. So, like... Mm-hmm. There's a difference there, but I don't know. I don't know. I have no idea what's going to happen. I do know that he's got a good thing going here, of course. They love him here, course. He's a Midwest guy. I think he fits here. I think his stuff fits here. I think his style fits. I think what he wants to do fits. Like, this is the guy that if you're Michigan State, I do think that you figure it out. Like, you
figure it out. And especially, you know, you go and win this game in this setting.
He fits.
He fits. You want to talk about the recruiting pump, everything that comes with it. Man, I'll tell you what, that's a noon game. That leaves you about 7 hours after that game to work the phones, man.
I mean, all the way. He's just, he fits everything they want to do. Everything that you can realistically ask from a Michigan State team or program. When you look at these programs, right, like Iowa and... What's the recipe going to be for you to be good? And we've seen it with D'Antonio. Like, the guy has to be able to be, you know, elite at something, but also, like, very good at a couple other things. And I think Mel is an elite communicator and leader. I think he's a very good defensive coach. And I think he's an elite evaluator of talent, or at least very good at it. And so, he's not trying to reinvent the wheel. He's not trying to do anything or overshoot his skis or do anything... you know, beyond his means or crazy. I think that in so many ways that D'Antonio fit, I think Mel Tucker fits. I think that it's impossible to say, right? Like, because D'Antonio, you know, you would have never known after 2 years what that would have become for them.
Sure.
But when we look at it now, and even when I looked at it last year, Mel Tucker is the type of guy that I think can really make it happen here if you give him the money and keep him happy, but it's going to be a task because you're going to have people coming after him because he was a guy that was overlooked for a long time. And he is not about to stay overlooked, I don't think, for very much longer. So, I think that's the situation. And this is a big week for Mr. Tucker, I'd say. And Michigan State. And Michigan.
get a little bit more into the matchup, I want to ask you, so you did a thing on how can Michigan, you know, last week you did how can Michigan State beat Michigan. This week you did how can Michigan beat Michigan State. Obviously, me being, you know, just the fair weather idiot who just kind of parachutes in, the one that jumped out to me the most is Thorne and Walker.
Yeah.
You know, and let's talk about that from both sides, right? Like what Michigan State needs from, like,
yes.
I don't know if they win this game without Peyton Thorne having a hell of a game. I feel like they can win without Walker rushing for 150 yards, right?
Yes.
And then on Michigan's side, like, are there times you're going to have to sell out on one or the other? So what say you?
Yeah, I think that you nailed it there. I don't think Walker has to go berserk, but I think if Thorne...
That's my analysis, man. Yeah, I know my shit.
I think if Thorne isn't being the guy that he's been on play action, which has been amazing, he's been incredible, he's been one of the best in the country. If he's not that guy, then you're gonna leave a lot on the field. And because I do think Michigan, Thorne is really the guy that gets you. And I think that, you know, I wrote that today, like Walker ultimately, I suppose, is the guy because you're still thinking about him so much. But it's that all that discipline that takes to make sure that he's penned in, you know, from your linebackers and your safeties and your overhangs. That's when Thorne rips you on that play action because he is so good at reading what you're doing before the snap. So when he turns his back, he already knows what you're in. To when he turns back around, picture's there. You know, Mike McDonald can blur that picture for him, and he's done that for other quarterbacks. Thorne is going to give him maybe more challenge than any of the quarterbacks that he's seen to this point. But back to the original spot there. I mean, like, Thorne has been the difference maker, I think, at the end. Like, Walker's been the guy that's got him all the way there. Thorne's been the closer. He's been the guy that's finished it off every time. The guy that, when you think you've done a nice job on Walker, or, hey, I think we've solved him a little bit, or we've got him penned up, he's not going to kill us. Oh, shit, there's a 70-yard, you know, whatever, because we forgot that Thorne can do that. Like, that stuff can't happen. And I think if you're Michigan, you got to play a lot of too high. You got to get the safeties back, because if you get one deep, he's going to take a shot. And I think you can do that and defend Walker. The reason why teams, and the reason why Don Brown, of course, never liked to play two safety defense was because, Brennan, as you know, you bring that safety up and you bring that safety up and you get your numbers advantage back in the box, right? So typically that's what you're looking to do defensively against the run. Paranoid, the old school way of defending, would say you got to get that extra guy in there. Michigan, and I don't know if it's every snap, but I think by and large they've improved on this, or at least they've started to do it. I shouldn't say improved. They've started to do it. They're playing what's known as gap and a half up front, which is a more modern thing in the NFL, which is you're playing basically, you're asking your defensive linemen and linebackers to take one gap, but also to help support a secondary gap. So you're, in theory, defending eight gaps with 11 people, right? Like, so you have enough, even if you keep a safety back, with help, if you play to your help and tackle and play in structure, Michigan has the plan to stop Kenneth Walker or to slow him down in a way that other teams have slowed him down, like we've seen this year, like Nebraska did. But if you can't do anything at corner and get back on Thorne, it's not going to matter. He's just going to go over the top and kill you. He is very good over the top. He's better than Lombardi. He's better off play action than Lombardi. He's really good player, and he's underrated because Walker is Walker, but like Thorne, I think people will see it in this one, unless he lays an egg. But like I've been very impressed by him all year, and I think if you're Michigan State, yeah, you need him to be big time. This has to be a big game for him.
How prone is Michigan to giving up home runs, big plays? Whether it's on the ground or you know something 40 yards downfield to Reed or something.
I think they've done a nice job of in structure of like limiting those, because McDonald gives them different looks and different coverages and things, things for the quarterback to look at. But the corners, you know, I mean, if you get
for
any,
those at home, Nick just made a contorted face that
it's not,
does not, would not give me confidence in Michigan cornerbacks.
They're better. Okay. They're better than they were in this game a year ago. But if we go back to what this game was a year ago, it was real bad. So like they're better than that. But they are not good enough for Peyton Thorne to not think twice about ripping that ball the minute he sees anybody in single coverage outside. If you are out there with Reed or Naylor, he is not going to care what corner you have on him. I guess unless it's Daxton Hill, and I don't know if they're doing that. Daxton Hill's not really a wide-out, walk-out corner. Maybe he covers one of those guys in the slot some. But, I mean, Daxton Hill's also part of Michigan's run game. This isn't a matchup situation where you're playing man anymore. So, you know, this is more of a pick your spots and don't give him spots. I think that's what I would say if you're Michigan here. And I had a commenter in the Michigan story say that from the looks of this, Michigan has no chance in this game. And I was like, well, there's another side to it. You can read the Michigan State story. Sure. But if you're the Michigan, if you're the Michigan person, if you're the Michigan side of it, you just say you've got to be able to find ways to make Thorne's reads as complicated as they can be. He is really smart, and you've got to find a way not to necessarily pressure him more or give him more problems with stuff in his face, I think. But I think you've got to give him coverage looks that are going to confuse him, and it's going to also require your guys to be on, you know, their best. Michigan's back seven has to be at its best to win this game, and really kind of prove that they've improved, I guess, is really the thing, because that's the thing we don't know. I mean, they've been better at big plays this year, but who have they played? You know, so, you know, that's what you'd counter with, and I think that now you're going to get one.
Am I right in saying that Michigan State desperately would love this to be high-scoring shootout, Michigan desperately wants this to be low-scoring?
I think that...
Control
game? I don't know. I think that Michigan would probably rather it be low-scoring. I don't know if Michigan... I think Michigan State could play either way. I don't think Michigan would want to get in a shootout, though, no.
Right, that's what I'm saying. If it gets into a shootout, like, I just don't... Does Michigan,
They would almost have to go to McCarthy, would feel like, in a way. I don't think McNamara would be able to do it. Because I think Michigan State... Yeah, I think Michigan State has enough in its offense, in its pass game, enough confidence in Thorne, and enough already built in to just sit back there. And if you take Walker away, yeah, they'll throw it all over the field. I don't think they care. And that's just something no one's done yet, right? Like, no one's really... Nebraska sort of did, and they struggled, and Thorne was not good in that game because Nebraska's front sort of controlled and made Walker make plays inside the box, and their offense also scored. So, like, that was the other side of it. So, like, I think they can play it both ways, but I don't think Michigan wants to play a shootout here, no. I think that they would rather have it in that, like, 20s, you know, 20-17, something like that, 21-17, 24-21, somewhere in there. I think a couple scores. I mean, you guys know, everyone's seen this game 1,000 times. It's funny how they all work out, but this is the match. The whole thing is over the ball. It's center, guard, guard against tackle, tackle.
Of course it is.
It's the whole game.
Of course it is.
In this game, especially, those are the five most important players in the team, because I would argue
decided by the goddamn 6 inches on the line of scrimmage.
Those five players might be five of the best nine on the field.
Okay.
I would argue. Or 10. How about that? Look, those are five, like, Slade and Simeon Barrow and the backups that they have inside for Michigan State are dudes. And Michigan's front is really good. So, like, this is going to be a fight here. Like, whoever wins this one is going to earn it, and whoever wins that is going to win the game. Like, that's... I told you that however many weeks ago. Whoever's better in that thing inside, if Michigan State can impact Michigan's guards and mess it up, they'll win the game. If Michigan can move those guys, they win the game. Those are the easiest paths to victory for both sides. How about that?
Yeah, you know, like, both teams have kind of had chances to blow it this year, right? And then blink and instead made plays and won games. And I'll be really curious to see if this game is decided by one of these teams going and winning the game, or
having to go win it.
Or if it's the, you know, someone does something apocalyptically stupid with 2 minutes left, the game's decided, and we talk about it for 5 years.
This feels like the latter, always.
100%.
It would be nice. It would be nice to see the former once, but this certainly feels like the latter. I don't know. I don't know how it's going to go. I do think both sides have enough to beat either, but I said a couple... I mean, Michigan's a favorite. I
don't get it.
I think I'd still give the Spartans a field goal, like I said 2 months ago.
Like,
whatever it was.
So if Michigan's currently at 4.5, that means that if they were on a neutral field, it'd be...
2.5, Michigan, or be 1. Michigan by 1. One or
Michigan
whatever,
by 1. No,
it'd no, be, no, it'd be Michigan
no,
by...
No.
No, you get plus 3, yeah. Right.
You get plus
Michigan
3.
Michigan by 7.
Which, like, I don't see that. I don't see that at all.
Has that line come down?
If they were in Ann Arbor, they'd be a fucking 10-point favorite? I mean, that's preposterous. So, I don't know. Like, 4.5 just seems like a weird number that it's one of those, like, does Vegas know some shit? Then you can really get into your own head a little bit.
I mean, I think that, like, Michigan State has thinner margin for error overall as an offense than Michigan.
And as we also know, Michigan lines are always skewed by Michigan fans betting.
Also down to minus all the time. Also down to -2. I'm seeing so some movement happening here as we're
big. That's as a we're huge taping move. Here. That's
well, I think it's happened for the last couple of days. In one book, it was down to -2. So I don't know if it's going to go up or down or what's going to happen there. But I think that Michigan does have wider margins with its talent, not as wide as it was a year ago. Of course, it didn't matter as we saw. But at the same time, I think Michigan State, their best players are absolutely good enough to win this game. I don't care what the margins are. Like, that's how I've sort of looked at it. Like, Michigan State's best players are as good as anything at their position as you're seeing on the other side or better. Like, Slade, Barrow, they're starting here. Thorne is probably starting here, right? I would say. Kenneth Walker, he's playing, I would think. Xavier Anderson. Like, these are good football players. And so, those guys, if Michigan State plays the game they want to play it, which they kind of have all year. They cut the plan the way they want to cut it. They hang in there and do their thing. Absolutely, they have enough to win the game. They have to measure it right, and they can't make a lot of mistakes, but that's kind of how they play. Michigan could probably get away with more, but you're also on the road. So this is a push, man. I don't care what Vegas says. I wouldn't bet this. This feels like a push to me. I mean, they feel very similar. It could be something weird happens on the day. I have no idea, but like,
yeah,
feels like a push to me right now.
I mean, taking a home dog in this.
Yeah, 3.5 to Michigan State.
When they're both ranked in the top 10, it's just wild.
Yeah, Michigan State 3.5. That's what I would say. I mean, that's crazy. Or 4 if you want. I mean, like, whatever. Like,
Right when we were coming on, I have a buddy who's he's a golf writer who's been kind of converted into doing betting for one of these massive conglomerate things. And, you know, he clearly doesn't know that I don't know shit about football. And he texted me right before we were coming on and said, talk me out of Sparty +4.5. They are frauds, but this is 100% the kind of game Harbaugh finds a way to screw up.
So there's your
national perspective on this is a guy who lives in Florida.
He's watching no Michigan State football.
Looking from afar, probably has not watched. No, he's probably just looking at the schedule and sees who they've beaten.
Well, they beat Miami, so he doesn't give a shit. Right,
Miami's dog shit.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, they're not frauds, but they're also not like, I mean, they're not, but I understand where he's coming from.
Because
I think
he's not the only one saying that.
I think the old school college football fan thinks of the number 8 team in the country as like a national title contender from the 90s. And this is not the 90s. The number 8, this is not your father's number 6, number 8, I would say, in terms of like, can either of these teams beat the number 1 team in the country, right? Like, that's just not.
Was it Penn State in the top 10 a week ago?
Hey. Yeah, people can pretend that that's something that's going to happen all they want. It is not going to happen. So, like, you know, if you're betting, you can make money or you can lose it. Like, I mean, one way or another, I guess. But, yeah, there's a difference in that, I think I'd say. But
Ohio State's still the favorite to win this league.
I would think so, by quite a bit.
I
do have a couple questions if you want to.
Oh, yeah, let's get into it.
You want to bounce into a couple of those. Did you have anything else there before we...
I mean, I was going to just ask... I have some thoughts on Eagles-Lions.
Oh, go ahead. Before we get into the questions, go ahead. You got Eagles-Lions.
The real rivalry game of the weekend in this state.
Well, are you prepared to come and watch Dan Campbell's first victory?
I'm going to the game.
I know.
I still have to get tickets, but I have to go.
It could be a hot ticket.
It will not be a hot ticket.
This is going to be like a $1 ticket.
I'm going to tell you this right now. If the Lions don't beat this Eagles team, Campbell.
Here we go.
fire Campbell. Cut everyone.
This is just some sandbagging.
Cancel Thanksgiving.
Oh, my God.
The whole deal. This Eagles team is so bad. No, they suck. I want Sirianni gone. Everyone out. Hurts, gone. Sirianni, gone.
What about Devonta Smith? He's been playing pretty well, right?
He can stay.
Okay, that's it. He got one guy on the
front office. Gone, all of them.
So the Philadelphia Eagle remains. We got Devonta Smith and Kelsey can stay. Everybody else has got
to
get the hell out.
I'm considering going and rooting for the Lions just to make sure that Sirianni's ass is gone.
They're not going to fire him after 1 year.
Man, they have gotten worse every single. Wow. This is something I've learned from you, Nick. Like,
oh yeah, well there you go.
They have gotten worse. Every single game. They have not made a single adjustment like to coach toward their personnel in any way. Like they're using they're using Jalen Hurts like he's Philip Rivers. Like some like old fat ass like just dropping back and just slinging the ball around. It's like what are you doing? Like half the season they can't get the ball Miles
No,
that's
the Philip Rivers, of course. Hall of Famer. You know,
the defense is historically bad. Like
I knew that was bad.
Yeah. You could go out there. They might make. So you're telling me, this is bad for the Lions though, because the Eagles are about to make Jared Goff look like goddamn Matt Stafford.
I actually told
to Calvin Johnson.
I told Chris. I said if they play like shit in this game, because they have a bye coming off this, the Lions do. And if they play like shit in this game, they are not going to be feeling good because the Eagles do suck. I agree with you on that. Like, this is absolutely a winnable one for
I'm telling you right. I'm for the kneecapper. Right now, I'm telling you right now, there's no chance that the Lions are losing this game.
Guarantee a lead pipe lock. We're going to see our first kneecap in Ford Field, courtesy of the Philadelphia Eagles. It couldn't happen any other way, ladies and gentlemen. It had to be right. Philly.
And that charter flight back to Philly.
Leave him, throw him out.
You're going to see Nick Sirianni's bags right on the tarmac next to it.
With you taking a piss on him there at DTW? You can get over there in time after the game ends? Okay, let's get into the old questions here.
All right.
Start one from Tyler. This is a good one. Most underrated Michigan State, Michigan moment / game you have been around? I would say the most under... I got a moment... Most underrated, you think there, that I've covered.
Yeah. I'm obviously going to go basketball, so.
Yeah. Well, that's a good one, too. In football, the one that is the most underrated, I think, well, the 2015 game in general is the most underrated game in this entire series because it ended with that punt, and that's all anybody remembers. The game was fantastic. The actual game itself was a terrific. It's one of the best Michigan State games that I've watched, and I've watched more or less all of them since I've been alive, I think.
Sure.
And in that game, Jordan Lewis and Aaron Burbridge,
oh, yeah. I remember
the Detroiters, a couple kids from Detroit, went at it in like one of the best. And, you know, that's back when Michigan was man-to-man all the way, all game long. Nobody had any questions about what they were doing. And they went at it all game. And like Lewis had, I think it was like 18 reps they went at each other. Like Burbridge had like 10 catches. Lewis had like 8 pass breakups, something like this. It was... one of the best individual like fights between two dudes who just like left it out there at each other.
Sure.
That I've ever seen on a football field. It was great. It was like so fun to watch. Like in like that alone on every single play. You don't see enough of it. That was like I left that feeling like we should see something like that every year in this game. Some kid from Detroit on that team. Some kid from Detroit on this team. Like just and they're both stars, right? And they're going at it. And that's what that was. And that was like so fun. So. That's an underrated one that doesn't get talked about still enough.
That's a good one.
Because it gets overshadowed by so many other things that happened that day. What do you got?
I mean, the 14 game, both were ranked in the top 20.
Is that where Stauskas? Yeah.
Stauskas blowing kisses was one of the most unbelievable things I've ever seen. Because that's one of my favorite parts of the rivalry is when the road team silences the place. And it's just incredible.
Yeah.
Every single time. And it always takes the guy with, like, basically the biggest balls on the court, right? Are making those plays at the end of crunch time. And, like, when Michigan State came into Ann Arbor, what year was that? And just beat
That would have been, like, 15 or 16, somewhere in there. And when Karras was hurt?
Yeah, that sounds right. And it was the lower bowl was just basically Michigan State.
You know? Yeah. Yeah.
And you're just like, oh man, that'll sting, you know?
Yeah. Right.
I mean, personally for me, the year that I had the back to back embeds was unbelievable.
The back to back what?
embeds when
Beeline
let me in for 3 days before the Michigan State game, and like watching that game plan come together, and I'm like, man, you know, this looks foolproof to me, boys. You know, shit, that looks good. This is incredible. And then you go out and you just watch it fall apart. Yeah. You know, like when you're inside and then you see the plan not work.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. In the locker room at halftime, and you know, like Jaklic is looking at me, just shaking his head, just like, this is bullshit. And I'm like, man, woo.
And you're like, well, also, I think that's even the one where like it lets you sort of see when you probably saw when it was like, this is not.
Oh, yeah.
This is you not saw what it coming undone.
Yeah.
You saw
yeah.
it coming undone.
A lot yeah. faster than maybe you would have otherwise. Yeah, that's very
yes.
interesting.
Yes. Yes. And then
you're like, this is not good.
Yeah. Like, a week later, you know, I had it was with Izzo for the day. So I met him at his house at 7 o'clock in the morning, and he's already just moving 100 miles an hour, you know, just for an 8 p.m. tip off. And that was just a wild day. Just a wild, wild day. And then they go and, you know, they win that game after they fall down at halftime.
Yeah.
Izzo comes into the locker room, and it was one of just the most maniacal, just insane performances by another human being I've ever seen.
What did he do?
Called everyone out just by name in the middle of the locker room. Just, you're a piece of shit. You're a piece of shit. Where are you? You know, where are you? Are you
even here right
are
now?
Are you even here? You know, just undressed everyone. And they all sat there and took it. And he said, okay. And they all got up and started cheering. And I'm like, what? Like, it was one of those, like, moments where you're, like, have an understanding of how that place works and how that guy has, like, kept that thing together for all these years and why the alumni come back. And, you know, they all just start pushing each other. And Izzo's in there and he's punching everyone in the chest. They're all fired out. They go storming out the door and then just went and knocked them off the court. And I'm just like, oh, my Lord. You know, it's just when you get in like that for a rivalry that you've been covering for that many years.
That's crazy.
You know, it's just, that was wild. So
yeah, those locker rooms before that is,
And this year, let's get some asses back in the seats. Let's get the building. Because it is, man, that rivalry for hoops is, you know, you can have your Carolina Dukes and your Louisville Kentuckys, man. Like, I'll put it up, as long as I've been here, I'll put that thing up against anybody.
When it's good, it's really good. And I think that's the thing that I always try to remember about it. Like, basketball really helped, I think, with a lot of, myself included, because this got so toxic with football. Both sides had their say in it. And D'Antonio, of course, leaned into it more than probably anybody, and partly because he was here longer. But, like,
sure,
the basketball stuff with Izzo and Beilein, when they both got good and they both got legit good, and they were, you know, Izzo had already been that way, of course. But when they were both really pushing each other, you know, like,
Yeah, that was like, and they still are, right? Izzo and Juwan. That's a different type of thing that I look at what Tucker and Harbaugh are doing right now, and I don't know if it'll be Tucker and Harbaugh, but like, I see that it's possible that like Michigan and Michigan State can cut the thing differently, do it their own way, and sort of like find a way to have two successful teams at the same time. I don't know if either of them will be like, you know, top five teams every year or whatever. Right. But I do think if you get the right coaches and you sort of settle on your plan and not try to be somebody else, both sides, then I think you can be formidable, good, all the time, tough outs, teams that are hard to play, and that's what you want. That's what Michigan and Michigan State basketball are, and it's fun as shit every time they play. And
you know, one of the weird things about like the difference in the rivalry is that I've always felt like covering like the basketball rivalry at its peak, you know, when they're going against each other as top 10 teams and all that. Almost each year, I feel like, not almost each, well, maybe almost each, I have felt like one of the teams in that game like could potentially
win the title.
Win the national title. Right.
That's how it gets there.
There were years where it looked like both of them, you know, when they're both top 10 teams, like both of them could potentially win a national championship. Football, because of the makeup of college football,
right.
You know, it's like those two are still playing each other. It means everything in the world. But guess what? There's still Ohio State and Clemson and Alabama and, you know, whatever other programs are actually the real kind of national title picture contenders, which is just such a weird.
Well, I mean, you got the expansion,
the whole makeup.
You got the expansion possible, you know, all that coming up, you know, so that could change things. There was a time where I didn't know if it was possible for both sides to have, you know,
something that we would both consider to be like both of them are good for a long period of time at the same time? What would that look like? And I look at the jobs these guys have done in the first 7 weeks, and I think these plans are sustainable. Like, I don't know if they will be sustained. I don't know if either of these coaches will be the coaches that do it, but I think like neither side has tried to be anything other than exactly what they are. And it's like when you're self-aware and you have a total, you know, fully engaged mm-hmm. with your locker room, man, like, which is what you just talk about those basketball teams. That's what they always are. I mean, it's every single day of every single year when you have coaches that do that, like, there could be a rivalry here that's more than just like once every 65 years or whatever that we have a game like this. And I do think that's possible. And I don't think they have to go slit each other's throats to get there. I don't think it has to be you have to die for us to get there. I don't think it has to be it'll never be over because he's a piece of shit and I think he's a piece of shit because my family says I think he's a piece of shit. Like, come on. Like, it doesn't have to be like that. I don't think at all. I don't think it is like that, frankly.
Right.
On the football side or the basketball side, as things sit today, and I think we're all better for it.
Yeah. All right. Let's get a couple more questions in because I gotta go write about basketball.
Pete says, if you're coaching one of these teams, would you rather have your bye before the game, have 2 weeks to prepare, or have the bye 2 weeks before and have the chance to get the rust off? I think we had that before. I would have rather had it last week, I think. State's bye. Michigan State's bye. That's what I would have rather had.
Same.
Aaron says, Nick, you grew up in Michigan. Is it hard to separate fandom from work? More of a question towards Lions. Like, how bad do you want them to be good, or does it even matter? For what it's worth, if you have fandom, you do a good job of hiding it, especially with Michigan and Michigan State. Brennan, does your fandom get in the way here? No, that is actually interesting. Like,
You grew up right in it, man.
I have thought about that a lot with the Lions. I will talk about Michigan and Michigan State here in a second. But I have thought about that a lot with the Lions, and it has actually made me think about Michigan and Michigan State differently. I was obviously a huge Lions fan when I was a kid, and all the way, you know, I, like a lot of people, stopped watching them when I got to, like, you know, every day or whatever, like when I got to, like, high school and beyond, because they lost all the time, and it was like, I'm not spending my time watching the Lions lose. So, you know, but I was a Lions fan. Of course, you always want to see them do well, but, you know, you're covering them, so you have to be objective. And, of course, that's what I've been, but I think that what I've sort of grown to with the Lions fans, especially because I think I identify with Lions fans way more than I ever did with either college football fan. I think I realized this. I understand the Lions fan so much that, like, when they say something on Twitter or whatever that sounds like a psycho, I'm like, that person's not being a psycho. They're just in it right now. Like, like, you get what I'm talking about. Like, Eagles fans. I understand that with Lions fans. So, I don't think I'd let my whatever, I'm not a fan obviously, but I don't think I let that piece of me totally die with Lions, because I'd like to have that, I'd like to know sort of what their Lions fans are feeling, because I think Lions fans, the ones that have been, they're credible. Like, they know bullshit when they see it. I think they've been through it, and I get it. Like, there's a lot of them out there that I think that's come across in the last like 2 years that I've worked with Chris, like, that's hit me a lot, that I think I identify with them. So I do try to keep that in mind. And I think I write to them a lot more than maybe I would have, right? Because I think that it's like I try to write what I think they're thinking about or what they're sort of concerned about or maybe excited about or whatever it ends up being. And then with Michigan and Michigan State, I think I've tried to do the same thing. Like, I've tried to – I've obviously been around Michigan fans forever here, right? Like, especially in the last 10 years, more than Michigan State fans. But I've been around all of them forever, my whole life. Like, I've lived here. And, you know – I'm sure I cheered for both schools as a kid growing up. I know I did, either side. Some more for Michigan 1 year, some more for Michigan State in other years. I probably like Michigan State basketball better than Michigan basketball, right?
Right.
Like any kid would. But it wasn't ever like, I'm not, you know, living and dying with either school. It wasn't, I liked the Lions and pro sports more, I think is what I would say. So I've tried to put that into my sort of like college view of things and how I've written. And I think it's been good. I think, like, that's, since I've come to The Athletic, I think that's how I've tried to write about Michigan and Michigan State. Like, try to find the commonality that I understand where they're coming from with these teams. Because I know, I mean, I've been here for a long, long, I've seen all this. So to answer Aaron's question, which is a good one, you know, I'm not a fan, obviously, of any of these teams in the way that I'm going to the game and cheering for anybody to win or lose. I don't care one way or the other. But I do think it's incredibly important for writers like us to be fully understanding of what these fans are seeing, hearing, experiencing, want to see, want to hear, and what their questions are. And I think that, like, those are things that get lost on us over the years, and being here has really helped me with that, right. And covering the Lions has helped me with that a lot.
And I think one of the things about getting older, like,
and that too,
over and over is, like, you tend to just, I feel like when you're newer at it, you get more gassed up by fan reaction.
Oh yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And you let it maybe affect your thinking, or you have a tendency to feel like you need to respond to it in some way or another.
Yeah, you got to prove that it's not you.
And then as you do it more and more, you, like, now I get way more gassed up by what, like, fans who actually have, like, a platform, because like they're, like, quasi media or whatever it may
be. Yeah.
And you're like, well, that now I feel like you do need to respond to, because, like, that
that's being, bullshit. Yeah, right.
That, you know, that's you know, so that's where things can get a little uncomfortable and things like that. It's always been interesting for, like, me here, because, and you know this, like I didn't know, like, I moved to Tennessee when I was 30, and I didn't understand, like, the whole premise of, like, fans rooting for schools they didn't go to.
Yeah,
like, never, right. You're from the never Northeast. Crossed my mind. Yeah. It, like, no one in Philly, you're not going to, like, run into a LaSalle fan at a bar and be like...
You hit it down south.
You know what I mean? And be like, what year did you go to LaSalle? Do you know my cousin? Like, that was my normal back home. You know what I mean? And then here, you know, we're in Tennessee. Like,
you know, my cousin Dave.
The first, like, 10 people I met in, like, Tennessee stuff, like, at a bar, I'd be like, oh, well, you know, what year were you? And they looked at me like I was crazy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, okay, I see. You know, I had a better understanding. And then I moved up here and then kind of got into the whole, like, you know, the state's just divided whether you went there
well,
or not.
Well, sir, I didn't go to college. Okay?
It's just fine, you know. And, like,
you're like, fair enough, moving on.
But, like, it's more or less the notion of, like, college sports you know,
it's like a state sport.
It's a profession. Right. It's like a professional. Right.
Like Ohio.
Here. Right.
Or so, here to a degree, yeah, right.
Like, when I was, you know, coming up and being, you know, a college student and a fan and all that stuff, it was just like, it's your school. And that's, you just reacted. Yeah. You didn't, like, react as, like, there wasn't any, like, the vitriol was just totally different.
Yeah.
When you're like, it's, you're actually rooting or thinking about it as, like, a college sport. You know what I mean? And then out here, it ain't college sports out here, man.
This
you
is
know
not college
mean?
Sports. This is way of life. This is... And it's a weird, weird thing, as we have discussed over the years. And we can do so again, because it's always great to get into it. And I'm sure we will later in the week with Colton and Austin. But, like, the weirdness that creates the loyalty to this, it doesn't matter how it gets there. It fucking gets there. Like, the person who went to Michigan... And his dad went to Michigan, and his daughter, and his mom, and now all these people, right? And the whole family. They love the place as much as the guy who's never been here, Dan Arbor, but has every, you know, poster, DVD, trading card, whatever. You know the guy exists. Live in God knows where in, like, the UP. Some, they're the same in terms of their dedication, loyalty, whatever, because they've worn it their
100%.
Whole life. It's bred into their life. Like, when kids that grow up here say this, and this is not... I didn't grow up in one of these houses because my parents, I come from the other side of the tracks, as you well know, okay? I don't have alumni parents, all right? So I did not have that situation.
Yeah.
But a lot, you know, and I actually went to a place in an area that didn't have a lot of that either. But as I grew up, I understood it. I got to understand that people, you know, why it was ingrained in you and why it was something that was such a big deal for, like, how you lived, because your whole family, it was like... And it just sort of, like, bled into other families and other... And, well, my dad liked that team, so that's what we did. And that, you know, you're not allowed to root for that other whatever in here. And that's just what happened. It was like, it's religious, I guess, whatever. Probably something like that. I think that's what it was. It was like, and over the years with Michigan State, you know, as the 80s turned into the 90s, it became, and Jim Beckler was winning all those games, you know, I'm sure there was counterculture, right? Like, I want to be a fan of the team that everybody thinks is the less than or whatever, and that's how you identify yourself. It's the same thing as rich high school versus not rich high school, right? County school versus city school. Everybody has that. Everybody remembers that when you were a kid. Your high school had a high school they hated for whatever reason it was. And that's what this is. All the way down to its core. And I really don't think it's hard to understand. I don't think people have a difficult time understanding this one. I don't. I think it's... Nobody really apologizes for it, which is kind of what makes it cool. It's just is what it is. Can't help it. Going to be an asshole today is what it is, right? Like, that's one of those things.
Yeah.
And, hey, they wear it. So, is what it, yeah. I think that that's what kind of makes it fun and unique. And when it's good, and that's why people, I think, got bummed, you know, when they saw that game at noon and not in that primetime slot, right? Because we don't always get the good one here. We don't always get it to where both teams are good. And a lot of times it's one is good and one sucks, or one is good and one is going to ruin the other team's good season and, you know, make them not good, that kind of thing. So, yeah, I don't know. Interesting days, though.
Yeah.
Good question.
I would say the my reaction to the Eagles, right?
Yeah.
Fire Sirianni midseason. Like, that's my equivalent to, right, the way people feel here about
this. I think so. Right? I think, yeah, they're into their, like, you know, you've been around here long enough to know Detroit sports fans, right?
Right.
And how passionate they all are about those Detroit teams. It's the same way with those colleges that they're also fans of, whichever one it is. And you talk shit on one of those Detroit teams to one of those fans,
have a
good night, because you're going to hear it for, they're going to be saving shit and putting in folders on your ass for the next, I don't know how many years. That's what we do here. So welcome to the city, and you're welcome to leave anytime. Like, that's how it goes. So, yeah, no, that's all the way. I think that's what it is. I think it's cool. I think both sides are embracing it. Should be great. I hope we get more of them. I hope this is a trend and not a one-off situation. Knock on
yes.
wood.
Yes.
I got one more from Teddy.
One more. Oh, here we go.
Big Ten East is on a collision course for major shakeups in the standings. More so if Penn State didn't lose that 9 overtime game. LOL. He writes.
The dumbest thing.
Are there matchups between any of the Michigan, Michigan State, Penn State, Ohio State that raise your eyebrows? Michigan State, Penn State is the last game of the year. Same day as Michigan State, Ohio State. Michigan State could be undefeated on Michigan State, or Penn State, Michigan State. Have we seen that before?
No.
That's my answer. Let's see that chaos. Michigan State undefeated. Michigan one loss with a chance to ruin it against Ohio State on the last day. That'd be weird.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Or I guess it could be the other way around too, but yeah, maybe. We'll see.
I would say the scenario of the Michigan State beats Michigan on Saturday
and then loses
to Purdue the next week.
Well, Michigan loses to Purdue? Oh, Michigan State loses to Purdue.
Yes.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And then everyone's pissed. And then we're back where we began.
Yeah, that's very possible. I wouldn't rule out anything like that. I got to check, though. Is Michigan State playing? Yes, they are at the end of the year.
They play Penn State on November 27th.
Last game. That's what I thought. I wanted to make double checks. So. Yeah. All right. Got it. All good. Is that a jumbo episode today? A little bit. We'll get the extra one in there.
Nothing crazy. We got another one this week.
Yeah, Colton and Austin.
We're going to have to talk about Saturday.
Oh, yeah.
If we're able to swing something. I know you're going to be writing live, but maybe we can do something.
Maybe we can do something Saturday or Sunday. Maybe we'll see.
Yeah.
Where it goes. Okay. Yeah. We can do that. See what the people think.
Well, I need to know these things because if I have a podcast, I need to, you know.
Oh, you don't want to get hammered all that?
Not drinking and tweeting is
we'll
one
talk
thing,
about
you know,
it.
Recording a podcast.
Maybe we'll just do it Sunday. How about that?
I kind of like the idea, though, of, you
know. Okay. Well, you let me know.
A couple beers deep on this end. I give you hot takes, and then you...
I'll let you know when I get
back.
You
land a plane on all of them.
Yeah. I'll let you know when I get home, and then we'll figure out where to go from there. All right.
Perfect. Great job today, Nick.
Yeah.
And we appreciate everyone listening out there. Be sure to leave us a review in the iTunes store. Maybe next week when we're not talking about the rivalry, we'll go and read some of the the newer ones in there that we are very appreciative of. So leave a review if you would like to be included in that, and we'll be sure to get to you, and be sure to tip your bartenders and servers, especially this week. Everyone's in it together.